This is Finally Alive Radio, where we discuss God, relationships, and you. Visit us at finallyaliveradio.com. That's finallyaliveradio.com. Now, let's listen to Gary Aris.
We are talking about hell, everyone's favorite subject, which, coming from Universalism and Bishop Carleton, just kind of bouncing off of that, now going into hell talk and seeing where they come from. So clearly a lot of them don't believe in hell. Bishop Pearson believes that there isn't a hell, and everyone just goes straight to heaven. Wonderful. I feel like it just defeats the purpose. You know, why is there so much talk of hell in the Bible? Why bother preaching the gospel? I don't know. It just doesn't add up to me. And there's so much more. We've already talked about that. I don't want to go back into that. But anyway, we're now talking about hell and what that's all about. So we're going to do a little bit of a review, maybe looking at some similar verses as we did last time, but some other verses, just looking at different aspects, I think mostly, if not all, in the Old Testament, and looking at how they saw it. What did they see? What did they think of hell? And the key word is Sheol. There are other words, but Sheol ends up being the main word that we will stick to, because I think it's used, ironically enough, 66 times. So how about that? So let's go to Psalm 18 and looking at the different ways this word is used or different ideas. All right, so Psalm chapter 18, verse 2 says, "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock, in whom I take refuge. My shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised, and I am saved from my enemies." Verse 4, "The cords of death encompassed me. The torrents of destruction assailed me." The cords of Sheol, maybe it says hell in yours. "The cords of Sheol entangled me. The snares of death confronted me." So clearly, as we can see here, notice how they use the word. That's what we're looking at, Sheol. It's tends to be pretty dark, pretty negative, right? Doesn't sound very positive thus far. But what is Sheol here? What's the idea here? And let's read it, verse 4. "The cords of death encompassed me. The torrents of destruction assailed me. The cords of Sheol entangled me. The snares of death confronted me." So interesting, verse 4, the first line, and the verse 5, the first line. "The cords of death encompassed me. The cords of Sheol entangled me." It's an interesting way of... You guys see the connection there, death, okay? I hope you guys get that. Death, Sheol and death, they're partners there. Let's go to chapter 89 of Psalms. So Psalm 89, verse 46, and that says, "How long, O Lord, will you hide yourself forever? How long will your wrath burn like fire? Remember how short my time is. For what vanity you have created all the children of men. What man can live and never see death? Who can deliver his soul from the power of Sheol?" So interesting, there isn't a correlation. I guess that's one of the main things I want you guys to see. There doesn't seem to be a correlation between bad people going to Sheol, because we think of Sheol as hell, in our minds, right? And in fact, I think the King James will say hell. And that's fine, it's okay, but I just want you guys to see what's going on here. So far, it seems like it's generic in the sense of death. I think that's important to see it from their perspective, how they describe this. Let's look at 2 Samuel. Again, going through all these verses. And it's interesting when you only pinpoint Sheol, like the word Sheol, it helps to kind of paint a picture, and that's what we're trying to do here. So 2 Samuel chapter 22. This is the same as Psalm 18. Verse 4. It says basically the same thing. I'm going to skip that just to save some time. Let's go to Hosea. But it's the same thing I'll read to you. Verse 6. "The cords of Sheol entangled me. The snares of death confronted me." So it's the same idea there too. Hosea chapter 13. And let me just read this to you because it all connects. So I just want to kind of get through this part really quick. Hosea chapter 13, verse 13. "I shall ransom them from the power of Sheol. I shall redeem them from death. O death, where are your plagues? O Sheol, where is your sting?" Isn't that interesting? Paul quotes that. "Compassion is hidden from my eyes. Though he may flourish among his brothers, the east wind and the wind of the Lord shall come rising from the wilderness." And this kind of fast forwards us a little bit in Hosea. But here's an interesting aspect that we're going to touch on later. Put the word God there for a sec. Let me read this again. Do you guys remember when Paul kind of quotes this. He says, "Oh, death, where's your sting?" Why does he say that? Well, in a nutshell, I mean, to paraphrase, not to get too far into it, he gets it now, right? He's gotten Christ. That missing aspect in his life, he was the Jew of Jews, right? He was the best guy, the best Jew, if you will, right? The best Pharisee. But he was missing something the entire time. He gets that one missing piece, the cornerstone, if you will, Jesus Christ, meeting him and learning under him. When you meet him, when you understand him, when you've walked with him, I think that's the attitude. Oh, death, where's your sting? And I like the correlation because this is a, I'll say it, I guess my version is, but this is almost something being said, almost looking forward in that sense. When you hear Paul saying it, it's like, oh my gosh. What a way to put it. I mean, think about it. This is pre-Jesus. And then when Paul says it, post-Jesus, oh, death, where's your sting? As in a sense, you know, hey, hell, you have no more hold on me. Death, you have no more hold on me. But this is pre-Jesus. So that we have to, you know, keep that in mind here. Verse 14, I shall ransom them from the power of Sheol. I shall redeem them from death. Let's go to Job chapter 17. In a nutshell, what I was trying to get to, I didn't want to go too far into it, but I want you to see who does the redeeming. So Job chapter 17, verse 11. And remember, Job, Ugaritic text, oldest written book, right? It doesn't mean it's older than the story of Genesis, but it is written before the book of Genesis was written, right? So anyway, so verse 11 says, my days are past, my plans are broken off, the desires of my heart, they make night into day. The light, they say, is near to the darkness. If I hope for Sheol as my house, if I make my bed in darkness. What is he saying? Is he saying I want to go to hell? So look at this aspect of the word Sheol. It's not just the hell that we think of. It's the grave, right? It's the other side. That's a key thing here. I'll put grave here too. Because if we're thinking of hell, hellfire, that kind of thing, if I hope for Sheol as my house, who would ever say that? Besides a melancholy person, right? That's pretty dark. If I make my bed in darkness, who would wish that? Unless he's saying, man, I can't wait to die because this is just hell, right? And notice how I use the word hell? Figure of speech. Okay, keep that in mind. You're going to see some of that going on. But that's basically what's happening here. Verse 14, if I say to the pit, you are my father, and to the worm, my mother or my sister, where then is my hope? So do you see the correlation Sheol and pit? You guys see that? All right, so it's not hellfire here. That's not what he's talking about here. Where then is my hope? Who will see my hope? Verse 16, will it go down to the bars of Sheol? So what are these bars? Let's call them the gates, okay? It sounds like there's gates. And I think we talked about that last week. I think it was in Isaiah. But it talks about gates. And what's the idea of gates? You Trumpians, you. It's like a wall, right? What does a wall do? Keeps things in or keeps things out? That's the idea here. The bars, the gates. You keep things in, keep things out. It's locked. Will it go down to the bars of Sheol? Shall we descend together into the dust? Notice the words here being used. Let's go to Genesis 37. And here's where it gets, I think, really interesting. And I think we touched on this last time. And that's why I can't remember if everyone was here. But either way, it's review. So Genesis 37, I'm going to go to verse 27. This is the story of Jacob, right? 27 says, come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. Okay, and we know he's going to be sold off. I'm sorry, I meant Joseph. Verse 29, when Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes, returned to his brothers and said, the boy is gone, and where shall I go? Verse 31, then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in the blood. And they sent the robe many colors and brought it to their father and said, this we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not. And he identified it and said, it is my son's robe. A fierce animal had devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. Verse 34, then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. Verse 35, all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, no, I shall go down to Sheol to my son, mourning. So it seems like the idea of hell that we know, New Testament, isn't the same Sheol that they're talking about, Old Testament. And I think that's important to see, because, let's see here, Jacob or Joseph, how could they be in our idea of hell? How does that work? Wouldn't they be counted as righteous? Doesn't God say many times Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? And why is Jacob saying, I want to go to hell, right? But no, he's saying Sheol. It's a similar idea. I want you guys to see this. I think this is a very important piece. Again, this is pre-Jesus, all right? Sheol, many times, not every time, but many times, is a generic word for death, the grave, the pit, that dark, ugly. Remember the last time? The dark, ugly place. There's no sound. There's nothing there. You can't see, right? It was a very, very dark way of explaining something. But not every time is it, I'm not going to say a bad place, but it seems like a generic term at least. So I want you guys to see this. Now, I'm not saying I hope we go to hell, and I'm also not saying hell doesn't exist. We're trying to clarify piece by piece here. Hope you guys understand my heart here. But let's go to chapter 42. Because again, no one would say, I can't wait to go to hell. That just doesn't make any sense. So Genesis 42, so verse 35, as they emptied their sacks, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack, and when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob, their father, said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and now you would take Benjamin. All this has come against me. Remember, this is when they're taking him to Egypt, right? Then Reuben said to his father, kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you. But he said, verse 38, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is the only one left. If harm should happen to him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol. Is he damning himself to hell? No. No. He's using a generic term, death. He understands death happens. So I want us to see that sometimes Sheol is just generic death. Okay? Another one, you don't have to turn here because we were just there, 2 Samuel 22:6, and that was again in Psalm 18. The cords of Sheol entangled me, the snares of death confronted me, the idea of death. Let's go to Job one more time here. You guys doing okay with this? Is this making sense? You guys see the verses, right? You guys see what I'm seeing too. So Job 21, I'm going to go to verse 10. So we're not taking too much time to get into too much context of the verses. But we're just trying to hit the main points that talk about Sheol. I think that's what we want to stick to right now. So Job 21 and verse 10 says, their bull breeds without fail, their cow calves and does not miscarry. They send out their little boys like a flock, and their children dance. They sing to the tambourine and the lyre, rejoice to the sound of the pipe. Verse 13, they spend their days in prosperity, and in peace they go down to Sheol. They say to God, depart from us. We do not desire the knowledge of your ways. So clearly, whoever these people are that he's talking about don't want God. So that's the polar opposite of righteous, right? That is a polar opposite. If you don't want God, you are unrighteous. Verse 15, what is the Almighty that we should serve him? And what profit do we get if we pray to him? Behold, is not there prosperity in their hand? The counsel of the wicked is far from me. I'm going to stop there. But going back to verse 13, verse 14, describing verse 13, right? The people who say to God, depart from us. Verse 13 says, they spend their days in prosperity, and in peace they go down to Sheol. So this is the opposite of what we were just reading. So we had someone who was considered righteous, and now we have other people who are considered not righteous. They're all going to the same place when we use the word Sheol. Because both times the word Sheol is used. The point again is the good and the bad. The righteous and the unrighteous went there pre-Jesus. Does that make sense? The same term, Sheol. So that's why I'm calling this a generic term, because it depends on the context. That's what's going to tell you what we're talking about. So Sheol, okay? Let's keep going here. Let's go to Job. Job chapter 7, verse 7. Remember that my life is a breath. My eye will never again see good. The eye of him who sees me will behold me no more. While your eyes are on me, I shall be gone. As the cloud fades and vanishes, so he who goes where? They go down to Sheol, does not come up. He returns no more to his house. nor does his place know him anymore. This is going to connect to the Gates idea here. I'm going to put the word stuck. Once you're in, you're in. You can't come back. It's a key element here. I know it sounds silly. Let me draw something for you guys here. So this would be considered obviously the firmament, right, up here. You know, you got your land here, you know, mountains, whatever the case. Here is the sea. These would be considered the pits. There's, you know, the pit, right? That's the idea of Sheol. So this is underground. This is underground here. And they would imagine like these, almost like, it's not like a tunnel, but it's the pit. It's underneath the earth. The foundations of the earth. This is the foundation. This is what holds it up. In pictures, you would see like, kind of like this. And you're thinking, why is there like a gap there? That would be the windows or the doors to the heavens. This would be the heavens here. This is where God would be up here, above the firmament, above all that. This is the heavens, right? And it's an interesting way that they look at this. So we have heaven, we have earth, and the things under the earth. Yeah, we got the firmament and the portal. The portal is right in the middle. So this is a picture of how they would see it. Now, what's interesting is even though it looks like a big circle, they saw the world as flat. Hence your flat earth society people. No, the earth is not flat. But then again, the people back then didn't know any better. They don't have telescopes. They don't have a way to go above and see. But anyway, the idea, I know I drew all this, but the idea is where's Sheol? Same idea. Where's Sheol? It's always beneath, underground, okay? So that helps me to picture it. I think this is important because people have said, oh, well, see, the you can prove the earth is circular by the Bible. Well, I think there's like one or two verses that I've read about that, but generally, when you read like history books, they pretty much have a flat picture and it's always flat to them. But they didn't know any better. And remember, is the Bible a science book? No, it is a book on God. It is a book on theology. The centerpiece is what? God, not science. All right, so I want to kind of put that out there. Yeah. Let's go to Numbers. In fact, let me just read it to you. It's the same idea. But if the Lord creates something new, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into Sheol, then you shall know that these men have despised the Lord. So what is the idea when Sheol is opening up its mouth? Where is it? It's underground, right? Okay, that's the point. It's all underground. Okay, so Sheol is underground. So let's go on to Job 26. Verse 1 says, then Job answered and said, how you have helped him who has no power, how you have saved the arm that has no strength, how you have counseled him who has no wisdom, and plentifully declared sound knowledge. With whose help have you uttered words, and whose breath has come out from you? The dead tremble under the waters and their inhabitants. So when we look at this picture, this is an idea of what they're talking about. Why are the dead trembling under the waters? Because of this. They go under the waters. And think of the idea of waters, the deep seas. That's what this is representing down here, the deep seas. And we've talked about this in Jophie's class. What's the idea of water? Even the ideas of the deep seas, all the way out there. Who's out there? Whoever goes out there. Nobody, we don't go out there. That's scary out there. If you go, you may not come back. It's a scary thought. Do you see a correlation of the idea of Sheol? It's that faraway place. We can't go there. And whoever goes there, they don't come back. So do you see the picture that they create for themselves here? So verse 5, the dead tremble under the waters and their inhabitants. That in itself is a scary idea. Oh my gosh, oh, I don't want to go there because I'll never come back. Verse 6, Sheol is naked before God and Abaddon has no covering. Remember Abaddon, we saw that last time, I think. Remember what was Abaddon? Do you guys remember that? A place of destruction. Okay, so you'll see Sheol and destruction sometimes together. So do you see how Sheol, depending on context and depending on what we're talking about, can be used in very bad ways, in some sometimes I guess good ways when it's Jacob talking, and sometimes something in between, death, the grave. So again, context, 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 right? But it's an interesting thing that the correlation, you can see it in the picture, the grave, Sheol, and those deep waters, they all have something in common. Somewhere you don't want to go, but we all know we're going there. This is part of their idea of death. Let's go to Proverbs, chapter 27. So Proverbs 27, this is the typical, you know, people look at verse 17, iron sharpens iron. We're going to look a little bit past that. Verse 18, whoever tends a fig tree will eat its fruit. He who guards his master will be honored. As in water, face reflects face, so the heart of man reflects the man. Verse 20, Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, and never satisfied are the eyes of man. Interesting correlation. Kind of like when I go to the buffet, I get two plates. And a lot of times I don't finish the two plates. My eyes are hungrier than my belly. I'm making a correlation, but similar to the idea of Sheol and Abaddon, they're never satisfied. So what's the idea there? Looking at the idea of Sheol, the grave, it's always like me, it's always hungry. It'll keep taking in, all right? Does death ever stop? No, it doesn't. Look at the correlations there. Sheol and Abaddon, they're never satisfied. But we're just trying to see from their perspective. It's never full. We could say that in today's terms, people keep dying. People die. Millions of people die. So it's an interesting way of looking at Sheol. And do you see the genericness of it? It's not saying people are going to hell. It's saying people are dying. Okay, again, do you see the genericness? Let's go to Isaiah. I'm going to go to chapter 5. Verse 13 says, therefore my people go into exile for lack of knowledge. Their honored men go hungry, and their multitude is parched with thirst. Therefore Sheol, verse 14, has enlarged its appetite and opened its mouth beyond measure, and the nobility of Jerusalem and her multitude will go down, her revelers and he who exalts in her. Sheol, it's always hungry. It never stops eating. Does death ever stop? Nope, it doesn't. It keeps going. So when we look at it this way, I mean, the vastness of this place, the underground, right? And the vastness of that deep sea, it's a scary place. It's almost like a horror film, right? It's vast, it's huge, it's hungry. It opens its mouth so large. When you go there, it's dark. You can't see, you can't hear. And in some of the places, I think, if I can remember correctly, it was also one of the worst places because you're also far away from God. That was the place that separated you from God. So there was other places where we read that. So notice the different ways it's explained. We read about the bars in Job. I have a whole bunch of verses on the gates, but let me just read them to you. You don't have to turn there. Job 38, verse 17 says, have the gates of death been revealed to you? So the gates, yet again, there's something about these gates. Or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? Okay, so darkness and the idea of death, right? The idea of Sheol. Isaiah 38, verse 10 says, I said in the middle of my days, I must depart. I am consigned to the gates of Sheol for the rest of my years. So they had this idea, gates. So what are these gates? Well, whatever goes in stays there. That's an important piece. Now let's go to Psalm 30. Yet again, another contrast here of what we've just read. And this was my point earlier when I wrote the word God over there. So Psalm 30, verse 1 says, I will extol you, O Lord, for you have drawn me up and have not let my foes rejoice over me. O Lord, my God, I cried to you for help, and you helped me. O Lord, you have brought up my soul from Sheol. Whoa, wait a minute. Isn't that a big contrast to what everything else that we have read? The gates of Sheol, right? The gates of Sheol, the bars of Sheol, you can't escape it. The hungry Sheol, right? It's never satisfied, right? The big mouth of Sheol, it'll take you. And then here you have in the book of Psalm, quite the opposite. O Lord, my God, I cried out for your help, and you helped me, and you healed me. Verse 3, O Lord, you have brought my soul from Sheol. You restored me to life from among those who go down to the pit. So we are clearly talking about the same place. Sing praises to the Lord, O you his saints, and give thanks to his holy name. What happened here? So it's interesting, the idea of the gates. Let me read this really quick. I'm going to read out of Enoch. I know it's not in your Bible. I'm going to do a bunch of reading, and I'll come back to Psalm 30 here. And we read this a long time ago. So Enoch chapter 10 says, then the Most High, the great Holy One, spoke about these things, and he sent Israel to the son of Lamech, and that was Noah, and said, say to him on behalf of my name, hide yourself and reveal to him the end that is coming, that the whole earth is destroyed, and a flood is about to happen among all the earth and utterly destroy everything that is in it, and teach him that he should flee, and his seed will remain in all generations of the ages. Speaking of Noah. And he said to Raphael, bind Azazel hand and foot and throw him into the darkness. Open the desert that is in the Dadwell and throw him there, and place under him the rugged and sharp stones, and let darkness cover him. Let him live there forever. Cover up his appearance and let no light be seen. Who's speaking? It's God. So it's telling, you remember the sons of God, all those, right? That you're going to be bound up. You're going to be in this dark place. And you stay there how long? Forever. Later on, without me reading it, they go to Enoch. Hey, Enoch, do us a favor, man. We're behind these gates. Can you tell God, you know, there's got to be a way to forgive us. There's got to be a way out. He goes, Enoch tells God. God says, nope, they stay there until I say so. Enoch comes back with a message. Sorry, went in there, tried to vouch for you guys. Sorry. He says you can't come out. The point of that is exactly what we're talking about here in the book of Psalm. Chapter 30, verse 3 again. O Lord, you have brought up my soul from Sheol. Even they understood that, yeah, Sheol's a bad place. Sheol's a dark place. You can't see, you can't hear. But there is someone who can bring you out of it. God. It's pretty crazy that they realize this. I don't think they realize it fully until obviously after Jesus. But it's interesting that there's hints of this, and they do understand the power of this God. I'll say it that way. Take a look at chapter 49, Psalm 49 verse 7 says, "Truly, no man can ransom another or give to God the price of his life, for the ransom of their life is costly and can never suffice. That he shall live on forever and never see the pit." For he sees that even the wise die, the fool and the stupid alike must perish and leave their wealth to others. Their graves are their homes forever, their dwelling places to all generations, though they called lands by their own names. Man is his pomp will not remain. Man in his pomp will not remain. He is like the beasts that perish. This is the path of those who have foolish confidence. Yet after them, people approve of their boasts. Like sheep, they are appointed for Sheol. Death shall be their shepherd, and the upright shall rule over them in the morning. Their forms shall be consumed in Sheol, with no place to dwell. God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. What an interesting twist at the end there, with the last verse that we read. That's where they go. That's where the foolish goes. That's where these guys go. There's no way out. But God's going to do something for me. How do you get revelation like that? Pre-Jesus. So they've got hints. They don't know how the whole system works quite yet. We don't have Jesus in the picture yet for them, right? But isn't it interesting? As powerful and as dark as Sheol, the scariest thing you can think of, death, right? But to come with the revelation from God, obviously, to say, oh, Sheol, where's your sting? Kind of a funny connection there to Paul, right? It's interesting. Pre-Jesus and then post-Jesus, Paul really gets it. Oh, yeah, I totally know what this means now. Oh, death, where's your sting? You've got no hold on us. So anyway, that's a little bit more on the whole Sheol idea, just to add a little bit more to what we talked about last time. Can you guys see maybe a different aspect of what we were thinking of, at least in the Old Testament? Because we're just in the Old Testament so far. And let's see what else comes up as we keep going here.
Thank you for listening to Finally Alive Radio. If God has touched your heart with any part of today's message, let Gary know by contacting him on finallyaliveradio.com. Would you like to download this episode for free? Now you can. Finallyaliveradio.com has every episode ready for download absolutely free. We'll meet you again next time when we look at God's Word with your very own Christian counselor, Gary Aris, and learn how to finally be alive in Christ.